מרחמים, מרחמים תשוב את זיכון בתוכה, כאשר נמאסה,
tells us that when we speak about HaNetzach, when we speak about the concept of eternity, eternity is synonymous with Yerushalayim. That's what the Gemara tells us, that in the Torah, HaNetzach can be a code word for Jerusalem. And we're going to try to explore that concept tonight, the concept of eternal, the concept of being above the dimensions, being above time. And We can explore it in two different directions. We could start from the end or start from the beginning. And I think we'll start with the end and go back to the beginning. everyone seems to like that. He sat there in the forest weeping, calling for his father. Abba, where are you? How could you leave me here? And he's sitting there in the dark of night, all alone in the forest, warm tears trickling down his cheek as he looks, where could his father be? And all he sees is darkness. He sees the shadows of the trees and darkness. And for the first hour or two, he's wailing, Father, Father, in the hope that maybe his father will appear from somewhere. And after a few hours pass and he's still all alone in the cold of the forest, he starts thinking, how did I get here? And he remembers how many times his father warned him and said, I'm warning you one more time, and I'm going to put you out of the castle. I'm going to put you alone in a forest. And he remembers how time after time he didn't heed the warning. And then the day came when his father finally had it, and he put him out in the forest in the middle of the night. And there he was in the cold of the forest all alone. His father put him far, far away from the palace. And he was alone. And he starts walking through the forest. He has to find some form of food. And it starts raining. And he's cold and he's shivering. And suddenly there's a burst, clap of thunder and a burst of lightning. And when he sees the light, for 1 second he could see it's like daytime. He sees his way around the forest. And when he looks, he sees way out yonder, he sees his father's soldiers. So he starts running towards them, and they ride away. And again, he feels all alone. And again, he starts walking through the forest. And again, there's lightning, and again he sees soldiers out in the distance, and again he tries running, and again by the time he gets there, they're not there. And after this happens a few times, although he's shivering and he's cold, he knows that his father might have put him in the forest, but he's left soldiers at a distance keeping an eye on it. Those soldiers didn't just happen to be there. His father didn't leave him to die, he punished him, but he's still somewhere over there keeping an eye on him. In the Song of Songs, we were told of a story of a girl and a guy. They love one another, spend a lot of time describing the beauty. He describes her beauty, she describes his beauty. And at one point, she says, he got fed up with me, but I know he's there behind the cracks, he's looking, he's looking at me. He's keeping an eye on me. We've had a long period where we were that child. God warned us and warned us and warned us until finally God said, that's it. Now I'm going to take your treasure. I'm going to take the temple and destroy it and banish you from the land of Israel. But I'll keep an eye out for you. And throughout our history we have these flashes of light, be it Hanukkah where suddenly we have a miracle. Everything seems to be going against us and suddenly there's a miracle. People are saved. Suddenly there's a miracle, there's a flask of oil, and it's a reminder. And those reminders are supposed to give us strength, to give us the recognition that God hasn't forsaken us. Those reminders, here are a miracle, there are a miracle. Throughout our history, there are flashes of light to remind us we're not alone. And now we're back. What our grandparents and our great-grandparents and their grandparents dreamed about, we just did tonight. We walked down there next to those stones. They heard about it. You know, the Netziv, when he was a child, so his father used to sit him on his lap and play with him horse and buggy. And he wanted him to love Eretz Yisrael. So what would he do? He'd tell him, now we're going to drive up to Eilat. And then we're going to make a turn. And he'd drive with him all around Jerusalem. He'd make a play map. And this was the way he got his son to visualize the land of Israel when they were out in Europe dreaming of Israel. And we're here. We're walking, we're here. Where are we? What does it mean we're here? So, the concept of eternity is a concept that we first apply to God, right? God is eternal. And God says there are things that are connected to me, and they also have the concept of eternity. Let's go back to that night. When the old father, he's, how old? He's 82. He's 82 years old. And it's late at night, and his children beg him, Dad, the war is about to break. Come, we have what we need, let's go. And he says, no, I left down yonder a few old vessels, I want to get them. And the children say, "No, Dad, come on. The war can break at any minute now. Don't go. Don't go." He says, "No, I got to go back. I got to go for those vessels." And he goes for those vessels, and he's the chief general. He's the one everyone's relying on him. And when he goes back for those vessels, he's jumped, and he spends the rest of the night wrestling. We all know who that old man was. That was Yaakov Avinu. And at 82 years old, when the children are on one side of the river and he's on the other side of the river, he's wrestling with the angel of Esav. And all night long he's wrestling, and comes sunrise and the angel says, "I gotta go, let me go." And the angel has succeeded in wounding him on the one hand. He's given him a low blow. But on the other hand, he can't win. He's wounded Yaakov, but he hasn't won the fight. And then he succumbs. He says, "Okay, let me go." And Yaakov says, "No." And then the angel says, "Well, what do you want?" And Yaakov says, "I want you to bless me." At which point the angel says, "Fine. Your name is no longer going to be Yaakov, which means in the end, in the heel, at the end of time, you will overcome. No. Your name is going to be Yisrael." Yaakov is Milshon Ekev. Ultimately, Yaakov will succeed. No. Your name is Yisrael. Yisrael means you have overpowered the forces. You can overpower every force of nature. You, by the fact that you've overpowered me, you've just shown that you are above the forces. And this concept of Yisrael, Israeli, it really means son of Jacob, who has the power to be above time, to be above the forces of nature. We know that when it came time to destroy the temple, all the nations gathered to destroy us. And they all came with one intent. Some of them were volunteers. The Ammonites, the Moabites, our neighboring friends, all volunteered. They didn't even ask money. They said, "We'll come with, just to destroy them." Everyone came with one intent. And at the end of the day, we're still here. They're not, but we are. That's Israel. That's the concept of Netzach, eternal, that we have. So if someone tells you about an Israeli Arab, maybe you know what they mean, I don't know what they mean. Israeli means descendant of Yaakov, who was given the power of Israel. No Arab is a descendant of Yaakov, to the best of my knowledge. I don't think so. Then he'd be Jewish. So the concept of Yisraeli means descendant of Yaakov, having this power to be above the forces of nature. And it's a misnomer that today we use it as a nationalistic term and we apply it to Arabs. Impossible. An Arab can't be Israeli. An Arab could be a Yehudi. Yehudi means monotheist. Well, if we view their religion as monotheism, they might be Yehudi. So don't go telling that to the Knesset. But an Arab can be a Yehudi, but he can't be Israeli. What does Yehuda mean? Atam ode et Hashem. Et yud kei vav kei. Yehuda is a combination of Hodaya and yud kei vav kei. And Yehuda is from Yehuda because the primary Shevet that was exiled was the tribe of Yehuda. So they identified all the monotheists as Yehudim. And it's a play on both. There are places in Tanakh where Rashi seems to say what you're saying, that Yehudi is focused on the term Yehuda, such as in Daniel. And there are places where Rashi seems to say it's monotheism, such as in Megillas Esther. And really that idea is well backed in the Gemara and Megillah, that Yehudi means monotheist. I don't want to expand on that. I do want to expand, that's just not here now. When did it all begin? When was this place a special place? Who knows? Yaakov's dream. Okay. Guys, I got an email a few times over the last few weeks, over the last few months. Guys asked, the listeners asked that people put their phones on vibrate. So I don't care. I think the music's very nice. But the listeners asked that I ask the guys to put their cell phones on vibrate. This place was the first place God created. When God created the world, He started with that rock, which was the rock under the Holy of Holies. And then the rest of the world was created around that rock. And that was the physical world that was created. When the spiritual world, when man was created, so God took from the earth of the Holy of Holies, put together some of that earth, and formed the body of man. And that is when man was created. When Adam Arishan, Adam, wanted to bring a sacrifice, where did he go to bring the first sacrifice? Up to the Temple Mount. When Cain and Hevel brought their sacrifices, where did they go? Up there. when Avraham Avinu was told to sacrifice his son, where did he go? Up there. That's the place where Avraham Avinu went. That's where the Akedah was. That's where the ram was. Think about it. Where we're sitting now might be exactly where the ram was running. Avraham was on top of that mountain, and the ram was coming from a distance, and its horns got caught in a bush. And this could be exactly where the ram was running, where we're sitting now. Me, you, I don't know. Somewhere here. Because it was somewhere here. Avraham Avinu was standing just over there when he had Yitzchak bound up on that altar, which was an altar that he rebuilt, which was the first altar that Adam built. Meaning Avraham came up there, saw the destroyed altar that Adam had built in the beginning of time, rebuilt it up there, just over there on that mountain, where the Muslims have this little thing that's temporary. I mean, it's been there a little bit of time, but it's on its way out. Over there, that's where Adam was, and that's where Avraham did the Akedah. And when Yaakov Avinu was on his way out of the land of Israel, so God made something unusual. He took all the land of Israel, folded it up under there, and Yaakov's head was there, and he's dreaming, and he's seeing the ladder, which represents V'zeh Shaar HaShemayim. God reveals to him, you see up there? There are gates. Where we're sitting, this area corresponds to the gates of heaven. All the prayers of the world have to come through here. Wherever you pray, anywhere in the world, the prayers have to come through here and go up through this gate. That's the entranceway to prayers. That's why we all face to Jerusalem. Everywhere in the world, everyone's facing here. Center of the world. And when God gives prophecy to the world or blessing to the world, first comes down through here. Comes down through that gate, and then it expands to the world. It begins with the land of Israel. Whatever the land of Israel merits, it gets. And whatever the rest of the world deserves, they get next. So Zeh Shaar HaShemayim, this is the gate to heaven. Over here is where Yaakov had that dream. Zeh Shaar HaShemayim. Who's crying in the Book of Lamentations? Why are we comforting? So in literature we have a concept of personification. The chair said, boy, you're heavy sitting on me. Chairs don't speak, but we personify. We speak as though the chair has personality. In Judaism, we don't do that. If we say the mule spoke to Bilam, then the mule spoke to Bilam. That might have been a vision of prophecy where that mule spoke to Bilam. But it's not a game. We're not giving personification. Throughout the Tanakh, we find that Jerusalem has character. Jerusalem weeps over its children that have been exiled. Jerusalem is comforted. Half of the prophecies that we've been reading ever since Tisha B'Av are prophecies of comfort for Jerusalem. Not only we need comfort, it needs comfort. And God says, that's the apple of my eye. I'm always looking there. There's extra hashkacha pratit over here. So when we're here, it's a nice time to think about the concept of tefillah. I once ran a camp. But they came. And I tried to get the kids in to see Bill Clinton. He came to our town. He was president at the time. And we tried to arrange for all the kids to meet Bill Clinton. And we sent letters. And finally we got a letter back. Bill Clinton is coming to your locale. And he's going to meet with the teachers. And maybe we'll be able to get you guys in. And the kids are very excited. Think about it. If I gave you an opportunity to meet Bush now, and he's on his way out, you'd be excited. I don't know if you'd be excited to meet Olmert. I wouldn't. But Bush, you know, still something. If you got a personal invitation from a king, that's exceptional. We were given a gift that God gives us a personal invitation to come and talk to him three times a day. I don't know, I don't give anyone a personal invitation to come talk to me three times a day, and I'm not God, right? I'm nowhere close, right? You guys, you'll have to laugh. It's for a minute, yeah. Right.
Okay. You have to give us a sign.
Okay, when I put my hand on my watch, okay? So, tefillah is really a gift. God says, I'm going to give you a cloak. In ancient times, only royalty wore blue in their cloak. We were given a talis that has blue strings in it, and they used to have blue stripes on it, or the black represents the blue we don't have anymore. That's a special gift from God. God says you have a special clothing to wear, that's royal clothing, and you could come in and talk to me. We wear tefillin, God, that's also a sign, that's a connection between us and God. And God says, come, let's talk. Now, a guy told me that he... Okay, it's a long story. It's not worth the story. So, when we daven, everything is focused here. Chazal tells us we're supposed to have in mind corresponding to the temple because all the prayers go here. And we're connecting. We're connecting. Let's conclude with just a thought of how this place was chosen. There was a young man. Everyone thought he was a bastard. His mother became pregnant. They couldn't figure out where she became pregnant from. So, they kept him away from the rest of the family. And then a time came that had special occasion in the family, and of course they left him out with the sheep. And when push came to shove, so there was an important person who came to visit the family, and he said, where's the little one? So they said, oh, he's out with the sheep. So he said, no, bring him in. So they bring him in, and this important guest was Shmuel the Navi, Shmuel the prophet, and he tells them, no, he's the one God chose. He's going to be the king of Israel, and he anoints him, and that's none other than David, our famous King David. Well, David, he's going up in the ranks after he killed Goliath, and then there's a point where King Saul wants to kill him. He's King Saul's son-in-law, and King Saul sees the obvious threat. He's going to take the throne, so he starts chasing him. And the first night, when he's on the run, he runs to Shmuel, the prophet Samuel, who told him, you're going to be king. And he says, hey, you promised me I'm going to be king. And he says, yeah, you will. And that night he sits learning with Shmuel. Now, most people, if they have an operation pending, or if they have some serious illness, they can't see beyond that. A person can't see beyond his troubles. When a person has a toothache that's pounding away, he doesn't care about a million people in Somalia. It doesn't interest him. The only thing he can think about is my tooth. That's the way the average person is. When a person's running for his life, the only thing he thinks about is his life. David HaMelech is on the run for his life. The Israeli army has just turned on him, and everyone's out to kill David, and he doesn't even know who's next to kill him. His whole family is about to be murdered. They were, a short while later. His family, all of David's family was murdered, yeah. And David's on the run. His own wife is taken and given to another man. He's really, everything's down and out. What would you think he's thinking about that night? I think he's thinking, let me get together a band of people, let me see how I'm going to make this work. Chazal tell us that night, the last night he learned with Shmuel, he sat with Shmuel and pondered, where does God want us to build the temple? Where is the chosen mountaintop? Let's sit and look over the maps and look over the verses and figure out where does God want to have His resting place? Because throughout the Torah, God kept it a secret. God said to Himself, so to speak, if I say, where's my chosen place, what's going to happen? The nations, they're going to find out, and they're going to pounce on that place, and they're going to make it a center for idol worship. And then when the Jews come in and say, that's our temple mount, they'll say, oh, you're just copying us, right? That's the way the world works. So throughout the Torah, God just says, my chosen place. He doesn't tell us what the chosen place is. And that night, when the world is on the verge of destruction in David HaMelech's personal life, David HaMelech is not focused on himself. He's focused on Netzach, on eternity, on the eternity of the connection between the Jewish people and God. And so that night, he sits down with Shmuel, and they review the verses in the Torah, until they finally come to the conclusion that just beyond that wall, just over there, is where God wants us to erect the temple. And David HaMelech ultimately institutes the foundations for the building of the temple. The ability to see beyond oneself, the ability to see the future, the Netzach, that is Yerushalayim, that is the Beit HaMikdash, Yibaneh B'Mehrah V'Yameinu.